Hello, and welcome to Bergkamp Underland, an Arsenal podcast. Tonight, I'll be hosting. My name's Jason, and I'll be joined by Danny the GFP. How are you, Dan?
Oh, ray of sunshine as always.
I know, you've been boring me for the last 20 minutes.
Don't give our secrets away.
Honestly.
We'll turn up, we all say, hello, how is everybody? Have a little hug and then we get on with it, don't we?
I'm not hugging you today. I'm not hugging you at all today. Yeah, you okay, pal?
Yes, I am okay. I've had a nasty itch since September last year, and it's finally gone. I realised what was doing it. It was antibacterial wet wipes. Don't use those, people.
Oh, why did I ask? Why did I ask?
Don't ask him where he uses them.
No, you really don't want to know. You should see what he sent one of our previous guests on this podcast. It's not good.
I'll have you know that, what was his name? Old Smiley.
Rob Beckett.
I sent him a picture of me naked in the bath and he'd been covered up by a sponge. And then a week later, I went to see him live in Cambridge and he didn't bring it up. I think for everyone's concern, it's probably the best thing to do.
He's currently in therapy about it all.
I sent it to Matt Lucas and he loved it.
Yeah, I remember.
It's hilarious.
I do remember that one as well. Jesus.
Yeah, he did. He thought it was funny. I think he may have been laughed. But there again, some of the stuff he's done on TV.
Yeah, I think you two have a similar sense of humour. Okay. That's enough of you, Daniel. In any case, on to our special guest tonight. You have Glenn O'Glatton on the show tonight. Glenn, how are you?
I'm very well. Yeah, nice to be here. And thank you for that introduction. Special guest, excellent.
Well, you are. You're very special. Please tell the listeners about yourself. You know, work and Arsenal.
Well, work is, I was 10 years as a senior reporter at ITN, not the senior reporter, we had about 8 or 10 of us. That was the mid-80s to the mid-90s, so covering a lot of the stories, the big stories of the time, at home and abroad, so things like the fall of the Berlin Wall and Gulf War I, and domestic stories like Lockerbie and Dunblane, and so on. And then I left ITN and went to Sky News to be a political correspondent, which I did for 16 long years, which was quite fun. And these days, I left Sky 4 years ago, and now sounds very posh, but it isn't. I'm visiting professor of communications at INSEAD, the business school, the world's number one business school, just outside Paris. And I do quite a lot of media messaging with people I like, which basically means charities like Macmillan Cancer Support and Save the Children and so on. And I do a lot with the military, which I've always done on the side. And now I do a lot more messing about with the army. And as for Arsenal, well, I grew up in southwest London and my dad used to take me to see Fulham at Craven Cottage. And I've still got a soft spot for Fulham, but my uncle, who lived in Tufnell Park, used to take me to Highbury, and that was, you know, that was it, really. The first time I went there, I kind of fell in love, and have been ever since. Although it's harder lately.
Just a tad. Yeah, difficult times at the moment, isn't it? But you'll have seen worse over the years, won't you?
Oh, yeah. I think it's quite interesting. I tweak a lot, but a lot of Twitter followers happily, and it's interesting to see the divide between the generations. You know, it seems to me that people who are a bit older, like me, have seen worse in the past, and a lot of the people really complaining and moaning and sort of, you know, they think, you know, football began with the Premier League and they don't remember life before Arsene Wenger.
It's one of those things, isn't it? It's one of those things. Right, well, we're glad to have you on board from the world's number one business school. You're now with Four People's Number One Arsenal podcast. So that's good news. Next, we have God's representative on ABW. It's Raj Patel. How are you, Raj?
Good evening, Jason. I'd just like to say the very first thing I'm going to say tonight is hashtag Carpenter In. I am a Carpenter In fan. So there you go.
Only because you tried to buy the club.
He said no, but I think he's got a lot of grief, and also he's turned into a sci-fi buddy. If you're a sci-fi buddy, then you get my support. So Carpenter In.
You've sold out, bro.
Pirate fan TV here about this.
Yeah, let me tell you one thing, Patel, okay? You're part of the problem. You and your like are part of the problem.
I want a manager out, but it's not Carpenter.
But that's where you're part of the problem, Raj. Yeah, you don't realise the Barbican Pirates are suffering under his leadership. And it's wrong. It's wrong what he's doing to the club. They got humped again on the weekend.
That could apply to someone else as well.
They got humped again on the weekend.
So did we.
4-0.
3-1.
I know. We'll get onto that in a second. Behave yourself. Carpenter in my backside. I'm not having that. How's touring been? All good?
Yes, very good. Mumbai and Dubai last week. Back for a couple of days, but start again tomorrow for 4 weeks. So you won't hear from me for a while. I'm sure you'll be pleased about that.
Well, the way you're carrying on now, yes. St. Carpenter in, of course I will.
Excellent.
You've been to all these exotic places. The next exotic place is Swansea, I see.
Southend tomorrow, but we end up in Swansea somewhere, yeah. And I think there's a visit to Stoke as well, so it's all the nice places in the country. So anyway, it's all in the name of entertainment.
A nice trip to Mordor, pal. Brilliant stuff. Good to have you back. And finally, last but not least, it's the boy wonder from Down Under, Dominic Nusk. How are you, pal?
I'm also a very special guest, Chase. You missed that. I've just done none of that fancy shit that Glenn has.
No, you're not a special guest, mate. I know you.
It's all show.
It is indeed. How's life, UK?
Yeah, it's not too bad. Just pissing rain every day here in Vancouver. Something different. Danny moaning at the start of the show.
Honestly, you know, yeah, I was going to set my wrists 10 minutes before the start of this. He was just on it all the time.
That's why I only came on last minute, just before we pressed go.
Don't blame you, honestly. I was asked at 7 o'clock, can I host? Here we are. I know, it's always the same. Yeah, there we go. That's our lineup. It's good to have you on board, pal. It's been too long.
It has been a while.
Yeah. Right. That's the niceties then. On Saturday, early kickoff, we went to the Midlands. Between Snoopy and the Red Baron flying above, there was a game of football. Glenn, give us your thoughts on the game, pal. Give us your thoughts.
Shambolic. I mean, what do they do in training when they're practicing defence? Because I have no idea. Two schoolboy bits of defending from corners. It was absolutely pathetic. I mean, there were five Arsenal players bunched together, and behind them were three West Brom players. And guess what happened? The ball went sailing over the Arsenal players, and any one of those three West Brom players could have scored. It was ridiculous. What does Steve Bould actually do these days? Rant over. And, you know, I think generally the performance was, you know, we cannot lose to teams like West Brom. We have to beat teams like West Brom. And, you know, all due respect to West Brom, they're not in our bloody ballpark. It's ridiculous. It's very, very depressing as well. Shit.
Language. I've never told off an ITN reporter, but tonight could be the night.
Get worse too. Yeah.
Good man. No. They opened the scoring with Dawson, who's renowned for
running in on headers. Everyone knows that. You know, where there's no defence. It's like they hadn't. I don't know. Do they not sort of plan for, you know, who they're playing? It's just a joke.
Well, apparently they had been practicing defending corners during the week.
I heard that too, yeah.
And the execution, you know, if you're playing zonal defence, you're passing one player from one zone to another, you've got to mark it. There's a total lack of communication. There's no blocking off runs. Going down 1-0 so early to such a silly goal, I suppose. And we've been very good in this season on defending corners. But there was a total lack of application, I suppose. Did you think from there on, or no, this is the way it's going to go today?
Me, I thought, no, when we got back to 1-1, I thought, well, that's fine. Yeah, we'll beat them now. It's only West Brom. We didn't play that badly. Initially, at least, I thought, you know, we've got more goals than us. We're going to score some more goals. I was quite surprised when the second one went in. I was very surprised when the third one went in. I'm always optimistic. You know, when we were at the whole final, we were 2-0 down in the first 10 minutes. I was with my boy and I said, don't worry. Everyone around me was going, oh, my God, we're 2-0 down. Don't worry. We're still going to win. It's going to be OK.
Yeah, I remember that one.
It's wrong on Saturday.
Exactly. Raj. Sanchez replied for us, plenty of possession, no penetration.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on, to be honest. I mean, I always listen to this pod, even when I'm not on there. And it's we're kind of saying the same thing every week at the moment. And it's not just about lack of practice or there's a, you know, the midfield's a shambles, the defence is a shambles, and Mustafi has gone from great to rubbish in the space of about 8 weeks. And there's no creativity there. There's no intelligence anymore. There's claims from obviously lots of Arsenal fans that the players aren't playing for Arsene Wenger anymore, which
I didn't buy that.
Which is
you buy that? I didn't buy that.
What do you think? What do you think is not happening there? When you know
it's leadership. It's leadership. I personally think there's two things: leadership on the field. There's no, you know, Cech is supposed to command his penalty area, and you know he and Koscielny should be organising the defence. They don't seem to be doing it, and the midfield, I mean, we really miss Santi Cazorla. You know, there doesn't seem to be any kind of drive, creative spark, you know, leadership. There's no bloody leadership. And as far as the, you know, manager is concerned, I'm sure we'll come on to that, but I just think, you know, managers set the tones of set the tone for teams. The tone he's setting is kind of, you know, flaccid.
Or even flat. What do you think, Dom?
I think that, you know, both got some good points there as far as lack of leadership goes. But for me, there's just not been any leaders at Arsenal for quite a long time. I think that's been a well-documented sort of topic of conversation on this pod. And I am now starting to look around the league a little bit more and having a look at the managers that are having success. And what I notice with those managers is that they're implementing systems. They're not relying on on-field leaders anymore. Because I think the days of your Gerrards and your Lampards and your Vieiras and your Keynes, these guys, they're all gone. You know, kids are growing up now. They're spoiled. They are millionaires by the time they're 17, 18. That's, you know, the good old days of the 80s and the early 90s. They're just gone now. And I've noticed these managers, they're implementing systems. And if one player is out, like you mentioned, Santi Cazorla being so integral to our game, I don't want a team that's set up around individual brilliance anymore. I don't think it works. We can't just go out and out football sides anymore. Any team that comes that's well-drilled, that's well-structured, and that is coached sort of, you know, back to front in some kind of system or style seems to roll us over pretty comfortably now. And I think if you look at the teams that we've struggled against, of all the top six teams, we've got the worst record against all of them. And I think it's because we just continuously try to go out and out football teams, and it may have worked once upon a time when you did have the on-field leaders, you had the players on the pitch that could manage games and situations, but it just doesn't happen anymore. And I think if you look around, it's not just Arsenal, it's everywhere across the league. But the difference is some of these younger managers that come in and they're so tactically astute that it doesn't matter if Eden Hazard misses a game or Diego Costa misses a game, because the next guy that comes in knows exactly what their role is. They know exactly what they need to do. And of course, they might not do it as well as the person they're replacing, but it doesn't completely go to shit. And I think with us, if you lose a Santi Cazorla, for some reason, the whole thing just falls to pieces. And we don't have the managers on the pitch to be able to do anything. So I'm kind of looking at our coaching and our setup and structure and thinking, well, if something doesn't change there, then this is going to continue for a long time.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with that, to be honest. But
yeah, I think that's a very, very good point. I mean, I think there are exceptions. I think, you know, Barcelona with Messi and one or two other teams. I still think those teams can revolve around one or two players. But I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's and that's, you know, that's what Arsenal used to have, a solid defence. We used to sing 1-0 to the Arsenal. Now we sing it ironically. You know, it's kind of what I do anyway. It's sort of. It's, you know, it is about discipline and you know, knowing what you're set out to do. And that seems to be a failure, as you said, of, you know, Dominic, of coaching and of management.
That's been on for a while. I mean, the one aspect I look at this and I think, you know, everybody mentions Santi Cazorla. Are we really putting our faith in a guy who's had injury problems, who's over 30 years of age, never been that athletic, to run on midfield for the whole season? And if you're going to do that, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah.
And this is the thing, you know, he's chosen Koscielny, who's an introvert, as captain. I've never seen him organise in the defence. And this business of leading by example, well, that's fine, except when you get caught halfway up the pitch on so many occasions in big games. And, you know, you're not there challenging for the basic things you should be. You know, you wouldn't, you know, you'd get the mistake from Tony Adams, you'd get a mistake from Keown or Bold in their day, but you wouldn't get them not challenging for something. And this is endemic throughout it. Danny, Al Robson Kanu's second goal for them. Unfortunately, Kiszczek went off for Spina's come on. And, you know, from a guy, to be fair, I give Ospina a hard time, but, you know, he's great with reaction saves. It's the first really big mistake he's made this season for us. What did you think?
Well, I think it was if you trace the goal backwards, then you see that their bloke come down our right hand side, turned Bellerin inside out, put it through to the just in front of the I'm never sure the size. It's 18-yard box, I suppose, just outside the 18-yard box. And then he decided, here we go, I'll have a little chip here. So he tried to dink it over the top of the players onto the on-running bloke who later moved out of the way. And then Ospina, rather than trying to punch it out or what, I don't know what he was thinking, he decided to come almost sliding out to try and kick the ball away whilst laying down. Or I just watched it a minute ago and I'm still not sure what was going on. So he slid out to clear it. And then as he did, another West Brom player kind of lunged at the ball so Ospina pushed it into him and then it rebounded over him. And then the West Brom player who was offside, would have been offside, jumped up and spread his legs and jumped up in the air to get out of it. So then he wasn't, he didn't touch the ball. He wasn't offside, even passive offside, because there was no Arsenal defenders behind him, that everybody was all in front of him, so that no one could do anything about it. He jumped up, ball went through his legs and in, and so not much he could have done about it. I mean, looking at it, I wondered why Ospina didn't try and catch the ball, or why he didn't try and punch the ball away, which is the two things you'd have expected from a goalkeeper. Maybe he wasn't warmed up properly because he hadn't been playing long, because after a check went off after trying to clear a ball. I think he tried to whack it and then he's done his knee. So I think the reports are that he's out for a month. It was just another calamity. I mean, I'm surprised there wasn't clown music playing over the tannoy at West Brom at the Hawthorns when that was going on, because it was just ridiculous.
He'd been on for a while, though, Dan. I mean,
I'm trying to make excuses for him.
He's just hashed it.
The sun was in his eyes.
Yeah, it was a bit disappointing. But
there's no sun up there.
Yeah, no, it's one of those, isn't it? Glenn, we saw, you know, we've spoken about the midfield already. We saw that midfield turn up against Bayern, and up until the point where Koscielny gets sent off, they outplayed Thiago, Alonso, and Vidal. The Bayern midfield didn't hardly get a kick for 55 minutes of that game. With so much possession on Saturday, and we had, you know, we had the lion's share possession, why did we struggle to create so much? You know, how did you see that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I really don't. If I knew the answer to that, I'd be managing Arsenal. I just don't know what the answer is. We had Welbeck on, didn't we? And I think he's not playing Lucas Perez enough. You know, a fox in the box is what we need, but I'm not sure they'll get the ball to him very effectively. I mean, every time he's played, he's been really good. And I just don't know what it is about that final third and that kind of penetration. You know, we don't seem to be defending well, but we don't seem to be scoring goals either. And it's that's what's depressing about it. I don't know what the solution is. I wish I did know. I think it's partly mental, and I think it partly comes from, you know, I don't know. Is it Wenger's fault? I mean, I don't know. It's very difficult.
I think there is a factor that all the stuff that's also going on off the pitch must be affecting the players in some way as well, you know, with all the stuff, you know, the protests and all that. I mean, it must affect them in some way to affect their performances, because I just can't explain how poorly they're playing this at the moment and how it's changed so dramatically since January, basically, when we weren't doing too badly. And in fact, in January, in one of the podcasts, I said that we had a squad that was good enough to win the Premier League. I doubt that we could win it with the current manager, but the quality of the players hasn't kind of eroded or evaporated overnight. It's just that I think there's more than just on-field stuff that's going on that's affecting the performances. That's all I'm going to say.
The one thing I've noticed, guys, is obviously, pardon me, our movement up top, when our movement up top is fluid, we, you know, we don't have much problem in creating. But there are certain games where all of a sudden we just seem as if we're playing statues. You know, what are your thoughts on that, Dom?
I think it's a transition thing. I think you go back to defending and there's just such a big difference in the difference in players and how they're trying to defend. I have no idea, and I'd love to know from you guys if you can explain this to me, what we try to achieve when we play football. You know, there was talks of a few years ago where Cesc in the team where it was a, you know, possession-based tiki-taka type thing with the, you know, a miniature Barcelona kind of, you know, copy of what we were trying to do. And then since then, I just don't really know what it is we try to do every week. The Invincibles were very well known for defending a corner 1 minute and then scoring a goal the next. You know, it was a world-class relay team, as one of the commentators put. Yeah. And I have absolutely no idea what this team does when they go out and play football, other than just kick the ball around and hope that they're going to score a goal. And I think defensively, you see Sanchez throwing his hands up in the air quite a lot because he's going up high to press teams that are trying to bring the ball out, and he looks around and nobody else is doing it, and he throws his hands in the air like he's frustrated. Now, I don't know whether everybody should be doing that and Sanchez is right in being frustrated, or they're not being told anything and he's trying to get everyone to do it, or what's actually happening. But there just seems to be such a disjointed kind of, I don't know, team philosophy just defensively, where I think the way that you are going to score goals against teams that set up the way that West Brom and Tony Pulis is going to set up his team is by pressing and turning the ball over in situations that doesn't allow them time to get back and set up defensively, and quickly transitioning the ball through your midfield to the forwards, so that they're not running into brick walls, essentially. And I just didn't see us doing that at all. And West Brom are going to be more than happy of setting up two banks of four and keeping things narrow, because we don't use width on the pitch. All of our wingers seem to come inside and we try to pass through brick walls, and then they can launch counterattacks that way. We're an extremely, extremely easy side to play against at the moment, and we have been for quite a while.
It's not just the West Brom game at all. I mean, that's been repeated game after game, and we're just terribly, terribly predictable. So know how to play, you know. You know how to play, how to beat Arsenal. So you can.
It's very easy, isn't it?
Pro forma, yeah. And I just think, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, what we need and what we need to exploit is our pace. And you're absolutely right. You know, we just hit them fast so that they don't have time to, put up two banks of four. You know, and that's that goal that Aaron Ramsey scored against Lincoln when he literally walked into the net. That seems to be what we try to do too often. I mean, I'm a great one for, you know, yelling at them to have a shot from outside the box, because it might deflect, you might get a goal, you might get a corner, it might bounce back and somebody has a tap in. You never know what's going to happen. But how many times, you know, have we watched them and shouted, shoot, and they pass it sideways or backwards? It's so frustrating.
I saw an interesting documentary about the old Wimbledon days, and they said a lot of their success came down to the fact that the manager would say to them, I want each of you to have a certain number of shots. I want the team to have 40 shots each half. Just have shots. And eventually, like Glenn was just saying, you're going to get something from them. And remember, I think we started in the John Jensen days, didn't we? We used to shout, shoot at him. And then when we first moved to the Emirates, it was just constantly everybody shouting, shoot, because we were just doing that ticky-tacky, tippy-tappy stuff around the edge of the box. It was drives everyone nuts. Just have a bloody, like Podolski showed last night, have a bloody dig.
Yeah. I mean, passing it sideways, you know, on the edge of the area, it's just and backwards. I mean, it's just so frustrating. It's really annoying.
In all fairness, I mean, West Brom were six at the back a lot of the time. When their defensive shape was a bank of six and a bank of four, and they were very disciplined in the way they executed that. But as you mentioned about Perez, we don't seem to use the pace available to us. You know, we've got people like Perez who are lightning, Theo's lightning, but we don't, as Dom's mentioned earlier on, we don't transition quickly from defence to attack, and we don't put them under pressure using our pace.
But we don't put them under pressure when they have the ball trying to get out of their own defensive half anyway, to get those quick turnovers, so that you're basically... You know, if you can turn the ball over in midfield or in your own defensive half, all of a sudden you don't have that two banks of four set up. You've only got defenders versus attackers, and you can run at them. It's very difficult to defend when you're running back towards your own goal. When you've got your back towards the goal and you're just looking at the play coming on, it's much easier to defend. So those are the types of things that you see. Liverpool do it from right up high. Tottenham wait until you get to the midfield, and then it's just everybody's on your case. They try to turn the ball over from midfield. You know, Chelsea, you've got this thing going on where they're using those wing-backs to use that width that we don't have to get up inside those areas and create issues. But they all have a system in place for when they don't have the ball. And this has been my criticism of Arsenal, is I don't know how much training they do without possession of the ball. It seems like everything we do is just kick the ball around to each other at training. How often do we actually do any kind of, you know, tactical setup? Because even if you have, even if you're a high possession team in this day and age, you're going to have 60% of the ball, which means 40% of the time you don't have it, which means 40% of the time you should still know what you're doing.
Our possession stats for the WBA game, we had 77% possession.
77, wow.
76.9, I'm rounding up. Total shots, WBA had 12, we had 11. They had 8 shots on target, we had 2. And that's from the Arsenal website. You know, our shot accuracy is not good, even when we do shoot. And when we got, and when you got 77% of possession, you know, we've got to be working harder with it. Raj, yeah, as you say, it's Groundhog Day again. This is the same old story. We're not converting possession into goals. We're not dominating games the way we should be. We don't transition properly. Are we in a rut? Can we overcome this?
Well, we're going to have to, because we haven't got an easy run-in to the end of the season. We haven't in the last 2 or 3 years. But this time around, we've got to play City, United, Tottenham, and then you've got your banana skins with, you know, teams like Sunderland and Stoke, you know. So we're going to have to get it right. We've got this week off now. I know some of our players are playing international football, but something's got to be said on the training ground to get this right, because we've got to play City in 8 days' time, 9 days' time. And I dread to think what will happen if we carry on playing like the way we are. I mean, Danny, what do you think about this next few games we've got? I mean, have you got any hopes for success?
Well, being as I like my stats, I've been looking at the recent run, which is 4 losses in 5 games. Then after that, we've got Man City that we'll lose. West Ham, I bogeyed. If Andy Carroll's playing, we'll lose. Palace on a decent run of form away. I mean, that's not an easy place to go to. Fantastic ground, fantastic crowd. Maybe not so much the ground. And then Middlesbrough, who will have a new manager by then, and they'll be on the new manager bounce. But I was looking at some of the Arsenal stats from previous years. You know, the thing that people are talking about, this is our worst run since January, March and April 1995, where we lost 6 out of 7. But we had a reason then, because we were in playing home and away legs every couple of weeks in the Cup Winners Cup, which got to the final and then were cheated. But then the run that was worse before that, and I think Gunaholic was tweeting about this last night when I put it was from January 1977 until March 1977, we lost 8 out of 9 games. And we lost to teams in the Division One. We lost to Bristol City, we lost to Man City, Middlesbrough, lost to West Ham, Everton, Ipswich, West Brom, and QPR. The only point we got was a 0-0 at home to Sunderland. So I think we've got some way to go before we do that. But we're definitely not going to beat Man City. Glenn, do you remember? Do you remember that 1977-78 season?
Yeah, just about. my memory's not what it was.
was Twitter ablaze back then as well?
Hardly. I was just thinking about, you know, 77% possession, 2 shots on target. I mean, that is absolutely disgraceful. I mean, that's just appalling. And I'm not, you know, I'm an eternal optimist, so I don't share your pessimism. If we don't beat Borough and Palace, you know, we may as well just, you know, bloody give up. And we've got to win those games. And we've got to try, you know, I don't see why we can't beat Man City on our day. But it's just at the moment, I think their confidence is just shot to pieces. And I think part of the reason for that is, you know, there's just this uncertainty around the club, and that uncertainty is all revolving around Arsene Wenger being, you know, being arrogant and saying he's made up his mind, he's not telling anyone what he's decided to do. I mean, how did it come to this? I mean, how does a manager, you know, just get away with coming up with stuff like that? It's just incredible.
I think there's a lack of leadership in the club, isn't it? You know, I mean, let's park WBA and let's get on to the manager then, because in recent weeks Ivan Gazidis has not been seen. You know, there's no clear leadership from the club as to say, you know, okay, there's protests happening, whether you agree with them or whether you don't, I don't care. You know, it's up to them, whatever they want to do. I thought the Battle of the Planes and the Banners was the most embarrassing thing I've ever seen in my life. The number of texts I had from friends, you know, we're a laughing stock. And the club have been, you know, Sir Chips made some silly statement. Do you expect that from a £1 billion business, Raj?
No, not really. It is a bit strange. It's all gone a bit quiet. I don't understand why. You know, look, I've said for weeks now that I'm convinced that Arsene Wenger has already signed the contract. I've said it for weeks, and it's just a gut feeling. It's nothing. I've got no evidence. And I think that the club are just trying to work out when to announce it. And at the moment, we're in such a poor run of form that they haven't had a chance. And I thought, well, maybe that during the international break, they'd do something. But then he comes up with that comment last Sunday about, you know, I've made a decision, I'll let you know very soon. But, you know, if he has signed, they may as well just announce it straight away, because there's going to be a negative reaction anyway from a lot of fans. But just get it over and done with, so that the players and the playing staff and the coaching staff have got now, you know, the rest of the season to concentrate on without that hanging over their heads. I mean, I don't know. All we can do is speculate about what's going on at club level. I've heard lots of different stories today, which I'm not going to repeat. But it is a bit weird that, you know, we are waiting on one man. Only he can decide whether he's going to sign a contract or not. Doesn't happen at any other football club. And it does show a lack of weakness. Well, not a lack of weakness, a lot of weakness from the board, who probably are split as well between them about what to do next. But it is also very, very strange that Ivan Gazidis hasn't said a thing for months, basically. And normally he does come out with something. So I do wonder whether he's actually got a job at Arsenal and whether he's going to leave in the summer. But I don't know. If it was me, if he has signed, just announce it straight away. And then, you know, they can ride the negativity for a few days, and then everyone can just get on with supporting the team. And that's what I do as well, even though I'm very unhappy that a decision hasn't been made, and I'm hoping the decision will be the right one. But it doesn't look like we'll hear for a while yet.
I agree with you, Raj. And my gut feeling as well is that he's signed, or he's about to sign, or the minimum he's going to get is a one-year extension. And, you know, that's my gut feeling, and I think it's the wrong decision. And I just find it extraordinary that any club has got themselves into this position where, you know, the manager's got this much power. I'll decide what I do and when I go and if I sign a contract or not. And it's absolutely daft. And I think it's that uncertainty that is affecting, you know, everything, including the players, including that, you know, their lack of confidence. And I think, you know, I agree with you, Raj. I think the sooner it's resolved one way or the other, the better. And they should just come out and either announce that he's signed a contract or he's leaving in the summer, whatever it is. And we just have to swallow it and get on with it.
My prediction is that he will sign. They will announce. And we've got a messy summer coming up, because he's threatening all sorts about rebuilding and everything. But I don't think he's got the time to do that. I don't think we've got the cash to do that.
Okay, Dom, what's your thoughts on the situation? I mean, you know, the silence from the club, there's statements from the manager which are, you know, they've given us no clarity.
Unhelpful. So I was going to say unhelpful statements from Wenger. You should have just either kept shut, you know, or get on with it.
I agree. You either announce it or shut up, isn't it? You know, and obviously Gazidis missed in. Dom, what do you think?
Look, this is just my very, very humble opinion, but this situation to me only makes sense if Arsene Wenger had been winning titles and or challenging most years in the last few years. And, you know, he's getting on towards the end of his career. You know, everything's going pretty well. There's no reason to get rid of him other than he may want to retire soon. And so you would be happy to kind of wait around to see what the guy wants to do. And you'd be happy for him to make that decision. But the reality of our situation is we haven't been close to challenging for quite a long time. And I'm not exactly sure what he is bringing year in, year out, that people are clinging to so much. I still do think that the last two or three seasons where I've judged him more than the previous few that some others may have been judging him through, you know, where you can speculate all you like about the limited funds and things like that and the stadium move and things like restriction in the transfer budgets and stuff and whether there was or not, I don't really care. But for me, the last two or three seasons, he's had no excuse. The summer where he bought Petacek and nobody else, I thought was ridiculous, and I always think is ridiculous. And I think after that season, it not working out, that he should have walked away. Because, you know, that was a decision that he made. He believed that the squad was good enough. And it just shows me that I don't think he is willing to do what it takes now to be up there and be challenging each and every year. And we should be. We are a club that we don't need to spend. We've seen it before with Leicester, and we finished above every single big team in the last 10 years. Last year, we finished above all of them except Leicester. And so we have shown over the last few years that you don't need to spend Man City money to compete. But what you do need to do, I think, is have a system in place. And I don't think we do. I really don't see any kind of changes coming anytime soon where he's going to reinvent his manager style or the tactics of what he does on that level to be able to change what we do on the pitch. Because to me, I mean, you can get your Mesut Ozils and your Alexis Sanchez's, but we're making the same mistakes as we did 5 years ago. The same thing happens every year where we have a good run of form, everyone gets their hopes up, and then something happens and we have this, you know, big collapse in the middle of the season, and we end up at least 10 points off the top by this time of every year. And why I think that would change next year without any change happening, I would be stupid to believe that. You know, Raj was talking before about the manager potentially making a bunch of changes around the club, but, you know, I'm not sure what Raj has heard or what he actually thinks on that. So maybe you want to enlighten us a little more, Raj.
No, it's just that all the stuff that's been said in the newspapers, the stuff that he wants to reinvent himself, he wants to start from scratch and get rid of 6, 7, 8 players and all that. And I think it's all complete rubbish, because even if he wanted to do that, we don't have the cash available to do that. And he hasn't got the time, because if he has got a new contract, it's either, as someone said, could be 1 year, as Glenn said, or it could be two, which I think it is. And that's not enough time to rebuild. It takes a long time. You know, you bring in Klopp. Klopp comes into Liverpool. He's there for a long, long time. He knows it's not a 1 year project. The Liverpool board have probably given him 5 years to rebuild that team with the cash. And we haven't got the time. We won't have Arsene Wenger here for 5 years, I don't think. Going back to my original point about why I'm convinced he's staying is because he's always said that he loves the club, and I've never disputed that. I think he does love the club. And if he does love the club, then he wouldn't leave us in the lurch in terms of not having a succession plan and stuff like that. Now, of course, some people would say that a succession plan would be kept secret by the board, but we live in the 21st century, and secrets aren't kept that long. So I think that's one of the reasons why I think he has signed, because I don't think he's going to make a decision at the end of May and say, actually, I'm going to leave now and leave us in the lurch where we've got a summer where we have to try and rebuild the squad, because it is very possible that Sanchez and Ozil will go, probably even Chamberlain as well is probably going to go, and to get a new manager. So that's why I think he's going to be around for a while longer.
Let's hope it's not 5 years.
No, it'll probably be two, you know, but...
I find this whole thing like a Greek tragedy. You know, here was a man who was fantastic when he arrived. He transformed the game in England. I mean, completely transformed the English game. And now he's been overtaken by, you know, so many younger managers who've got fresh ideas, who've taken what he did and taken it to the next level. Now, I think part of the problem is that he believes so much in himself that I don't think he's capable of change. I think he thinks what he's doing is right. And I think, frankly, he's kind of lost the plot. You know, he was a legend, and, you know, that legend has been tarnished with every passing week. And I think, I agree with Dom, the last two or three years have been the kind of tipping point for me, where before that I thought, well, you know, we've got to support Wenger. He's Arsene Wenger. But now, I mean, really, he just seems to have lost the plot. He doesn't seem to be, you know, barely capable of managing, really, frankly. I mean, to be cruel, you know, he doesn't seem to have it anymore at all. And it's a tragedy, but you know, he's got to go.
Danny, you've been a bit quiet.
Yeah, I'm just tweeting Richard Osman about biscuits. I agree with what everybody's saying. It's what can you do about it? Wenger did come in, and he did. I was listening to Josh on the Football Testicly pod, and they had a bloke on there called Alan who made some really, really good points. But he was saying stuff like that Wenger inherited the team. He's been really lucky. He's only ever had a few decent players. The few decent players that he's had, they're the ones that won the title, not him. And I think, well, it's got to be somewhere between what he is saying and what other people are saying, that Wenger has to take a lot of credit with all the diet and the training and stuff like that. But he also said that he has spoken to Leeds. When Wenger went there, they say to him, are we going to do any defensive training? And Wenger said to them, well, if you want to do some, off you go, you can go and do it. So I mean, Cesc Fabregas left to go to Barcelona, he said he learned more there. I read this somewhere, so I can't remember where it was, so I can't prove it, but he said he learned more about defending in the first 6 months there than he did in the entire time when he was at Arsenal. And so many other players have come out and said there's just no defensive training. Dan, now,
isn't that what Steve Bold is there to do? Isn't that what he's supposed to do?
Well, our friend Hollick said he's been there, and the one time he went there to watch a training, there was no defensive training.
But Dan, that's one time. But the one thing I will say is, people said he's never built a defence. That Invincibles defence, the one that went unbeaten all season, was his.
And he converted Lauren from a right midfielder to a right back. Said, if you want to play, that's what you got to do. And he's one of the best right backs we've had in Premier League history. Ashley Cole, when he was we farmed him out to Crystal Palace, and when he first started playing football at Arsenal, he was he was a striker, but he was left footed, and he went to Palace because we didn't want him. And then he came back to Arsenal, and he learned his trade at Arsenal as a defender. In terms of, he's probably one of the best three or four left backs in the history of the club in modern era. So there are loads of players, but sometimes is it the built-in natural ability to defend, or what's going on? I think the point everyone wants to know is, Steve Bold, you're one of our best defenders. You're right up there with O'Leary and Adams and Keown and Campbell. Why aren't you doing something about the defence? Is he told you're not allowed to talk? Don't say anything, because he must be sitting there going, oh, what are you people doing? Are you not listening? And there's just absolutely no confidence in the defence. Ever since Mustafi has come back from injury, it's like he's had his defensive part of his brain removed when he was injured. Because he was fantastic beginning part of the season. And then we've seen when Holding's come in and played a few games in the League Cup, and I think he might have had a couple of FA Cup games, he's come in and he's been brilliant. So then there's that question of, why isn't Holding playing more games? Why isn't he doing that?
I think it's an individual issue. Here's my question for you guys. How often did that Invincibles defence have to defend the type of goals and chances that we're conceding right now? It was a team defending. You had Gilberto Silva running around, you know, messing stuff up, and Patrick Vieira and other players that were more disciplined in understanding the style that they needed to implement, which was defend first, launch counter-attack second, and let the attackers go and do their thing. I don't think it's an individual issue with Mustafi not being worth 35 million or Koscielny making individual errors. But if you give any defender, I've seen it from Barcelona defenders, I've seen it from Real Madrid, I've seen it all over the place. If you give these defenders constant one-on-one situations that they have to defend in, they're going to panic and make mistakes. If they're not getting any help from anybody and they're constantly having to run back towards their own goal to defend, they're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you look around at the other teams and the defense starts from the number 10 or the number 9 up top. That's where their defence starts. And that's not what we do. And that's the issue, I think, is our defence starts when the other team gets to our back four, rather than having to get through a forwards and have to get through the midfield. And then the last port of call is the fact that you've got to rely on your defenders to clean stuff up.
Yeah,
that's my issue with how we're playing right now, is that nobody's defending except the back four. And if you get at them enough, they're going to make mistakes.
I think Wenger, to be fair, recognised that, which is why he put Coquelin where he put Coquelin. But, you know, it hasn't really worked. You're absolutely right. You need a shield in front of the back four. Of course you do.
Yeah, this is the problem. You know, at the moment, the midfield has this season has chopped and changed so often. There's no solidity there between injuries, suspensions, etc. You know, we have had no continuity. And it has shown. And, you know, early part of the season, everybody's saying, oh, well, we're playing easy teams. You've still got to play them. You've still got to beat them. Did we flatter to deceive? Because we didn't create a massive amount against Borough or Burnley early part of the season. And they all looked really dangerous on the counter-attack against us. So, you know, were we lulled into a false sense of security? You know, we seem to be in disarray. We're in sixth. Okay, we have a couple of games in hand on Liverpool, but we're Sov United and they're 2 points ahead of us. Are we overreacting? Can we come back into this? Or do you think there are really deep-lying problems there?
Well, I think, you know, the Burnley game is quite interesting examples. We were lucky, actually, in both the games, especially away, you know, with the last-minute winner. And at home, I remember watching that game, and we were saying, oh, well, sooner or later, this lot, they're going to crack. And when they crack, we're going to score, you know, three or four. And I think, you know, I think we did ride our luck quite a bit, and we did perhaps flatter to deceive. You know, I'm an eternal optimist, and I think, you know, we could, you know, do better than people think we're going to do. But I'm not sure we're going to come in the top four this year. I can't really see looking at the table how we are going to come in the top four, and looking at the games we've got left. So, and as for winning the FA Cup, I mean, that's a real long shot this year, isn't it? Man City in the semi-final is going to be tough. So although I'm an eternal optimist, I'm not particularly optimistic about the rest of the season. And, you know, I just think that something's got to fundamentally change. Yeah, perhaps we're spoiled, you know, perhaps we're spoiled by the fact that we've come in the top four for the last 20 years or whatever it is. And you know, our expectations are high, but of course they're high. We expect to win league titles. This is, somebody called it the Arsenal Financial Corporation the other day. You know, we're not interested in that. We're interested in trophies and winning the Premier League. And one day, God help us, winning the Champions League. And it's just not happening, which is why I think we need a fundamental change. And, you know, change is going to be painful. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who we get if we get a new manager and how they're going to change things and how they're going to stand up to the board or not, how they're going to sort of shake up the dressing room or not. But I just think, you know, it's... You know, I don't think we are overreacting to answer the question simply. I think we need a change.
Fair enough. Raj, you know, has the rot set in or can this team and the manager turn it around?
There's enough quality in the squad to turn it around, but I doubt if they can now. To be honest, I think there's something happening. And I just can't see them responding to, you know, as fans as well, the atmosphere in the stadium is not going to be very positive. I hope it isn't like that, but I think it will be. And then the amount of pressure, every time that someone loses a ball in 9 days' time, there's going to be kind of groans and stuff like that. And we put pressure on the players. And then playing against Man City, it's the last thing that we want to happen. But I think we'll struggle to get top four now, fifth or sixth maybe. I think we've blown it this year for that, and I hope to God I'm wrong. But the way we've been playing the last few weeks, I can't see us improving. We need to win at least 80% of our games, of our remaining games, to have a chance of getting top four. Very sad to say that, but there you go.
Raj, would you say that we're sixth in the league at the moment? Would you say that's a false position or not? Or would anybody else?
On our current form, it's about right, surely. Yeah. Let's not blind ourselves with stuff that's happened in the past. On our current form, we're in the right position.
It's relegation form, our current form. It should be, you know,
we shouldn't expect to be in the top four with the way we're playing at the moment and the way we've played in the last 5 weeks.
We're the third top goal scorers. We're the sixth best defence. Sixth best goal... Oh, God, my tooth missing is driving me nuts. Sixth best goal difference. Sixth best most games won. And sixth least games lost. So that's why we're sixth.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's a full position at all. And like Glenn was saying, I think that with the kind of form we're in is worse than relegation form. It's absolutely horrendous.
Yeah. Well, you got Everton on the same point as us. You've noticed them. They've been winning their games last month or so.
And
we've got to play the last game of the season.
I want Lukaku. I've been saying for about 3 years I want to sign Lukaku, but you know they're not selling him.
Well, maybe he's not.
Go on, Glenn. No, I was just saying maybe they will, you know, sell him because he's not signing his contract, is he?
I think that's because he wants a release clause in it to leave after next season if they don't make Champions League football. But I think one thing we haven't said is that West Brom were having their best Premier League season of all time. And there was that stat going around that once West Brom reached 40 points, they won 13% of all their games. So far this season, it's 100% after that. But everybody knows they've scored 14 goals from set pieces this season. Yeah. I know we've already covered that, but I was just wanted to point that out because West Brom are a decent team, especially at home.
Yeah, they're no mugs. They're having a great season, aren't they? Yeah, we're looking at this. To me, the league never lies. You know, you are kind of where you are. We got two games in hand on Everton and Liverpool. One game in hand on the rest of the top four, and we're equal games with United. Now, not so long ago, United was 12 points behind us. So the dip in form we've gone through is... You know, it's there, it's tangible, we can't ignore it. And the display against Liverpool, the display post Koscielny sending off against
Bayern, be a long list, Jace,
and the display against WBA are shameful.
And also, well, there's four Champions League places, but if Man United win the UEFA League, which the UEFA Cup, which it looks like they're going to do, then there's only three Champions League places.
Yeah, they've got to go and win it first, haven't they? And
of course, they're going to have bloody stroll it. They play Abramovich up front on his own. They play every position. Best player in they've got. They'll easily win that competition. Wait, and then it's going to be top three only for the Premier League. I mean, for the Champions League.
Yeah, but it's down to us to ensure we get there.
Well, that makes me happy. I don't... Well,
it's a long way to go. We've got City, but we got City at home. We got United at home. You know, those
we've
are
got
games
Spurs away.
When the hell have we been scared of Spurs away?
The last three years.
Man United at home could be really decisive, and the last game of the season, Everton at home, and that's going to be that could be decisive as well.
Exactly.
I don't think we're going to come top three.
Wait and see. I'm like you. I'm an optimist. I always see the positive in things.
You're a delusionalist, Jace.
No.
You're delusional. We won't even be off the sixth. If we finish sixth at this rate, it'd be a miracle.
But Dan, you're the most
easy tiger.
You go with the waves, don't you?
Thing you've ever said to me. When you're saying you are just...
I was going to go a bit stronger. Leap. I've been doing that recently.
You saved me, Glenn. Otherwise, he'd have gone nuts on me. You'd have gone full Welsh justice.
Yeah. In that case, let me ask a question. If Wenger goes, who do we want?
Allegri. I mean, Allegri. People have been talking about Simone, but Simone is a defensive type of player and manager. We don't have the defence at the club. And we were saying before the pod, when with Raj, what were you saying about Bellerin?
Well, he can't defend.
No, he's been to Barcelona, isn't he?
That's what we all think. He's growing his hair.
No, Danny, that's just been reported. That's what Raj thinks. That's what you think.
Yeah, no, Raj didn't say that he knows anything. We were just talking about him. It won't be long before the DNA is checked and he'll be shipped off to Barcelona for half what he's worth.
I don't think he's going anywhere, to be honest, though. But this is the thing. I like the boys, I think Allegri. I just think the way he sets up his teams, everybody knows what they got to do, and he manages to get the best out of the players available. I wouldn't want Simeone anywhere near our club.
Well, the thing about a lot of people say that about Simeone, and you know, I mean, I think Simeone is a thug, you know, and Beckham sent off all those years ago and all that. But you know, he might just have the balls to stand up to the board, and he might just put a bit of backbone into the team, and he might just, you know, scream and rant a bit in the dressing room and make them bloody pull their fingers out.
But you look at somebody like Allegri, who's got real discipline. I think you know, people underrate this guy's character.
Allegri would be my first choice, absolutely.
You've got to be realistic, as in pick a manager who has said that he wants to play abroad and manage abroad, which he does want to do. So it's not like we're saying Allegri and it's never going to, like Messi coming to Arsenal, which will never happen.
No. I just want to make a quick little point on the whole manager situation, because I know that there's going to be people that are big Arsene Wenger fans that say, you know, there's no guarantee and, you know, change could not necessarily be a good thing. But I just want to point out that every single team above us has had a new manager very recently.
And also you have to change, you know, you can't get sooner or later, you have to change. It's just a question of when. And I think it's a couple of years overdue. I think, you know, Allegri is ready to come. I think the time is right.
A bigger question is whether, if there is a new manager, whether he's going to get the funds to kind of build a squad in his kind of, you know, image. I mean, will Allegri or Simeone or whoever else you're saying are going to get the cash they need to bring the players they want.
They keep talking about a war chest of 100 million, and I think there's quite a few players we could sell as well, which would raise some money to buy new ones.
So. Oh, I've got no doubts that we have the cash, but whether the manager's going to be given that cash is another thing. Don't forget, Kroenke likes the club being very, very cash rich, so that he can use it to leverage his loans in the States. So.
Yeah, we'd like to get rid of him, wouldn't we?
Well, we would, but it's never going to happen.
No, well, it's not up to us, unfortunately.
Yeah. I can't see how he would give a new manager £150 million, which is what he might need if certain players go and he needs to replace them with players that he rates from overseas. So, you know, it's not about just the new manager, but whether he's going to be given the cash as well to build the squad.
And it also helps that Allegri at the moment is playing a 4-2-3-1 formation. If I remember, Sami Khedira, the German who was injured every 5 minutes, he's having a run of games. So it's not like we can have a manager who wants to come in and play three at the back, because then we've got four or five players, fullbacks we'd have to get rid of. Well, maybe Monreal can play at centre back, but with the form, yes, he does like to change his formation around, but he's got that midfield five which are very dynamic, and they've got, it's like Dybala. Oh, I'm not going to be able to say that right.
Dybala.
Thank
it's
you.
It's not happening.
Him and Hijwan, those two players, they're just doing playing absolutely.
Hijwan?
I say that for
Gav. What's
that,
Gav. Chinese form of cooking?
Well, that's what Gav couldn't say, Higuain, could he? So he kept saying Hijwan. So now I say it all the time. But yeah, they got some brilliant defenders there. I mean, Buffon is just about to play. He's damn, when he plays for Italy tonight, it'll be his 1,000th professional game. And they got Bonanucci there, and he doesn't take crap from players either. Like was it Bonucci that he dropped, and then he didn't just put him to the bench and then bring him on at half time. He said, "No, go on, bugger off. You've done something wrong. I can't remember what it was, but they're just a really good team."
Yeah, but he fined Bonucci. He had an argument with him on the sidelines, and he fined himself for getting caught swearing in front of the cameras. So he actually fined himself a 4 weeks' wages when he only fined Bonucci one, for argument's sake.
That's very good.
The thing is with Allegri is that we can forget about it, because he's going to go to Barcelona. However much I would love him to come to Arsenal, for many different reasons, he's got a very similar footballing philosophy to what we apparently currently have. It's a possession-based philosophy. He's very, very tactically astute, and there are systems in place there. The other thing he's managed to do there is the transfer that he has made when it comes to replacing players. Pogba left for huge money, and he made that midfield better. And let's not forget, Pogba was actually very good when he was at Juventus. It's not the Man United Pogba. And he replaced him with two or three, you know, 20, 25, 30 million pound players, and that midfield's better. He was, you know, smart enough to get, who's the fullback that he snuck in there?
Alves,
yeah, exactly. And he's just been so good at picking up players to fill certain roles in the system that he wants to do. And that's the big thing for me, which, you know, he doesn't seem to rely on any one player to make that system work and to make his team tick. And that's what I think we're missing.
Fair enough. Right, we've been running an hour. Let's go to questions. Daniel.
What you cheeky monkey. I was just looking at the news. Right, yes, we have lots of wonderful questions from our delightful listeners. Right, first one from Josh Robinson 87. If Wenger, I'll have to put my finger over my tooth when I say this. I've got an appointment though to go and get my tooth done. If Wenger stays and providing Ozil and Sanchez go, what positions need strengthening in the summer? As you're our guest, Glenn, you can take that one.
Oh, well, if Ozil and Sanchez go, well, I mean, first of all, we need a killer striker. You know, I want Lukaku or somebody like that. Alexis Sanchez, I just don't want him to go. I think he's just inspirational. I think he, you know, his work rate is phenomenal. I just love the fact that every time he loses the ball, he's like a kid in the playground. You know, I want my ball back. And he tries to get it back. How do you replace Ozil? Well, Ozil, when he's at his best, I think is pretty much irreplaceable, except with maybe Santi Cazorla. But when he's playing not well, you know, he's so invisible that I don't think we'd miss him that much. I think we need yet another central defender. I thought Gabriel, when he came, would be better than he's proved to be. Mustafi, I don't know what's happened to him. You know, he was great when he arrived, and he hasn't been lately. So, you know, give Holding more games and maybe another central defender. I think Martin Monreal is, you know, he's still good, but he's getting past it now. And Gibbs doesn't seem to be very settled. So maybe we need a new player in that position. Bellerin's future seems uncertain. He's fabulous going forward, but can't really defend terribly well. Debussy just, you know, hasn't had any games. You know, it seems to me there are improvements you could make, Josh, all over the park, really. We're probably going to need a new goalkeeper as well. You know, I want Manuel Neuer, but that's never going to happen.
So a whole Chesney.
Bring back Chesney.
Yeah, I think Sir Chesney will probably come back. I wouldn't mind Joe Hart. I know some people disagree, but I think he shouts a lot, which is good, and he's a good keeper.
I think the gist of that is lots. Right, one for you, Raj, from Billy AFC on a similar subject. With Sanchez and Ozil leaving in the summer, what chance do Arsenal have of signing any big-name players? I think he means of the same kind of ilk as them.
Without Champions League football.
Without Champions League football, without offering them a chance of, you know, I don't know who said it earlier on, that we don't need world-class players to actually build a competitive team, you know. I think it might have been Dom who said that, and I completely agree with that. I don't think world-class players will find Arsenal attractive at this moment in time, because we're not really offering much. We don't offer the kind of wages that City and City and United, Chelsea offer, and we certainly don't offer them a chance of winning anything apart from the odd FA Cup. So I don't think we'll be very attractive to the top-end players, but there are players out there who could improve us. And all you have to do is listen to Chris speak. I've turned into a bit of a Chris fan recently, which is pretty disgusting.
Sickening.
I know, but he does...
Patel out.
I've actually started listening to the radio show, and he actually does talk a bit of sense now and again.
And he's not talking down to the listeners.
If you spoke to him for 5 minutes, he could point out a few players which are more than affordable for the Arsenal, who would improve us in the long term. So, to sum up, I don't think world-class players would queue up to join the Arsenal, but there would be players there who could improve us. It needs a good manager to do that, though, not the current.
And that is the crux of the problem. Are you listening, Dom? It's your one next. From Nicky Wilson, he says, Alex Iwobi 18 months, The Ox 6 years, Theo Walcott 11 years. How long should a club like Arsenal wait for a player to reach their potential?
I think we probably wait a little bit too long. However, in saying that, you know, there are examples of players like Van Persie that we waited and waited and waited, but he kind of, you know, stabbed us in the back a little bit. But the 18 months of football that he gave us was probably worth the wait. The issue for me is you can kind of wait a little bit longer on some of those players, but also bring somebody else in to compete and then just, you know, basically throw a Paul Q on the ground and say, best man wins. I don't think that we're as ruthless as we should be when it comes to moving players on. I really don't. I think that you can look around the squad as a whole of players that you know, we do it at the start of every season when we say, which player do you think is going to have a breakout season this season? And the fact that we can name six or seven different ones every single year and they're the same six or seven players is probably a bit of an issue.
Yeah.
Lovely. Right, Jace, this one is from your mates at Gooners in the USA. It's Mike, isn't it? Who's the other one?
Oh, Mike and Andy.
And because Andy doesn't put it on his Twitter, so I never remember his name. He says, who's meeting me for pies and pints in Islington next week? Are you going to go and meet up with him?
No, my mum's birthday.
Oh, there was talk about you going to the game, wasn't there?
Yeah.
Fife Life.
Oh,
it's not happening.
Fifey, no, it's not, unfortunately.
Sad. Bring your mum to the game. Does she support Arsenal?
No.
Oh, my mum does. Not a clue what's going on. Right, one for you now, Glenn, from Noma. She says, Wenger stays. It's tentative with transfers. Keeps faith with average players. We replay the last 8 years. So her question is, what's there to look forward to?
There's life beyond football. Don't worry about it. yeah, well, it'll be Groundhog Day again, won't it? I mean, it's just that's the depressing thing. I'm so sick of hearing about, you know, how we showed overall great mental strength and as well character. I mean, you know, it's just, I'm sick of hearing the same record playing over and over and over again. And that's one of the reasons that I just, you know, I just desperately want to change. And I really think Arsenal's really lost it now and should, you know, should just retire. What's to look forward to? Lots of things. And, you know, okay, in terms of Arsenal, well, if we come sixth or seventh this year, then maybe we'll do better next year. I don't know. I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't know. I think I'll just go and slip my wrist now, actually.
So what do you do to cheer yourself up after we get hammered by West Brom or something like that? Do you have, like most of our pod, alcoholics, and they go and drown their sorrows? Raj goes face first into a Black Forest gatto.
I go and play with my kids.
Oh, I can't do that. Mine annoys me. I had a dream last night that I took her to the football. God, dear. Yes. Oh, right. Talking of people who like sugar-based delights, Raj, from North Bank Man. Which biscuits are you rooting for in the Biscuit World Cups? And he's put in brackets, check Richard Osman's Twitter. He says, I'm going for Bourbons. I mean, I nearly didn't read out the question because of what a stupid thing he's put there. I want a question, an answer from everybody, starting with Raj. Who's your choice to win the Biscuit World Cup? And if anybody says Oreo, you're banned.
Well, I have to make a confession that for half of this pod, I've been having a debate about Jaffa Cakes and Penguins on that poll.
I voted Penguins.
And we've agreed that Jaffa Cakes are cakes and not biscuits and therefore should not be in that competition.
Yep.
So I've gone for Penguins.
Because biscuits go soft and cakes go hard.
And there's also a VAT issue as well.
There certainly is. So, but overall, for the Biscuit World Cup, what are you going to pick?
Overall, for the Biscuit World Cup, yeah. I'm going to have to go for just a regular chocolate digestive.
You're not, I think, if not a traditionalist. Glenn, what would be your choice?
It's either custard creams or Bourbons. I know I'll go for Bourbons.
Oh, splitter. Dom, do you have biscuits in the land of Oz and Canada? Do you have, like, snow biscuits in Canada?
They've got great chocolate biscuits. I can't remember what they're called in Australia, but they are...
Tim Tams, Raj.
Tim Tams. They are the best. They're like they are. But better.
Oh, they would be a dark horse. They would be that smoky in the World Cup that gets to the semis that no one knows about.
It's the Denmark.
The Costa Rica.
Yeah.
So what is that your choice then, Dom?
Obviously.
Jace, is yours Kit Kat? You know that's not a biscuit, didn't you?
Ginger nuts.
How dare you? You leave Gimli out of this.
No, I genuinely love a ginger nut.
Sort your headphones out. And my one is going to be custard creams by a country mile. They are for my birthday when I was growing up, when I was younger, before the time when lactose and biscuits didn't kill me, my mum would get me a 4-pinter of full fat milk and a family size double pack of custard creams, and that would be done for the day. Oh, good job I didn't get fat from that, isn't it? Right, so that was Raj's one. What are you laughing at? Hey, I won't tell you how much weight I've lost this week. I have to go and weigh it. Dom, from Dekar Damien, when will Arsenal wake up to the crisis we are currently facing? If we fail to adapt to the modern game, we will fall behind. What's your views on that?
We have already.
Yeah, I think it's already happened. You guys were talking before about, you know, making top four this year and will we, won't we? And we've been in this position nearly every year for the last God knows how long, where there's a big crisis either at the start of the season and we wonder whether we can make it up. But this year just feels a bit different to me. I don't know about you guys, but it just feels really different. I think, you know, the Ozil Sanchez situation's just as distracting to the players as the manager situation. And there just doesn't seem to be any kind of coherence on the pitch. There's no confidence anywhere. And I do think that I pointed it out before that all the other managers that are managing these other big sides seem to have something a little different than what we have. And it's just proving year in, year out, and it's getting worse, that we are getting left behind when it comes to the tactic side of the game and, performances and being able to produce, you know, the same level of performance every week. So for me, I think that... the crisis situation, et cetera, we've used that word so many times. I'm not going to say it's a crisis. You know, there's worse things that can happen than your football side, you know, dropping out of the top four. But I don't think that we're about to start competing for titles anytime soon.
But, you know, the thing is, you know, we all think that. But last year we came second, the year before we came third. You know, it feels like we were close. And what we don't do, you know, is be consistent. There's no consistency. I mean, the way teams win titles is by grinding out those 1-0 wins. And we just don't seem to be able to do it. And we seem to be very fragile as well. And this season does feel different. It feels like, you know, a moment, a pivotal moment, a tipping point, and something's got to change.
Well, that's what we're all hoping for. Jace, this is one from Highbury Scott. Sort your headphones out. He says, what is Wenger's cut-off point in failure and that he has to go? What's the point where he is sackable and finally lose the next three question mark?
When you decide.
This is the point, isn't it? I mean, I think if our current form continues and we finish 7th or 8th, I think then he's in trouble. Genuinely think.
But who is? Who's in trouble with? You know, I mean, it seems to be up to him to decide.
A bit, well, all the revenues, etc. You know, all of a sudden, when you know, there's a lot of new deals coming that need to be renewed, etc. Okay, yeah. That will have an impact on the manager's position. Make no bones about it. You know, if Stan Kroenke is going to lose, you know, £50 million of income per year, per annum, all of a sudden, the manager's position is not the most important, you know, is not set in stone.
What do you think about what Wenger said about, you know, the Champions League is not so important financially anymore because of all the huge TV money?
It's not, though, is it? Because when you look at it, when you look at the top list of top 30, 40 clubs in the richest clubs in the world, the Premier League are all in there. Because of the TV money, that Premier League deal, to be honest with you, is kind of killing English football. Because the amount of money that comes in, there's a Premier League premium on any player now. You know, us going for a player and Juventus going for a player, there's two different prices, and they are vastly different. You know, and we can't ignore that. You know, they can talk about war chests all they want. The problem I see is, you know, the continual building, the continually raising the base, the base quality of the squad. You know, the higher your base, the better your performance, etc. But the truth of the matter is, you know, we've got to see how the season ends. He's there till the end of the season. That's not going to change. Yeah. Nobody's going to sack him before the end of the season. If we finish lower than 7th or 8th, I think he could be in trouble. But I'd be sad to see that. I really would.
Or him going or us finishing that low?
I'd be sad to see both. I look, regardless of whether I think it's right for time for him to go, and I do, I think the summer is the right time for Arsene Wenger to go. I'm still going to be sad to see him go. Yeah. The amount of bollocks I see on Twitter, you know, he's called all sorts of names. I'm not having that.
What was it you were saying in the group? You'd love to see him stay just to wind people up.
I'd love to see him sign a 10-year contract to boil the piss of some of those arseholes out there. The stuff I've seen written about it, is shameful.
Yeah. Mugabe, I mean, what's that all about?
To be fair, one of the boys knows that guy, and it's probably, it's just a bad analogy. But the way people jump on it and the way he's portrayed, you know.
It's what I was saying earlier, Jason. It's like a Greek tragedy. You know, he's a victim of his own, he's a victim of his own hubris and his own arrogance. And, you know, the longer somebody's got to sit him down quietly in a corner and explain the facts of life to him, because the longer it goes on, the more tarnished is his legacy. I mean, if you'd asked me 5 years ago, I'd have said, don't just build him a statue, rename the East Stand, you know.
Yeah.
Now, please, in the name of God, go.
But Glenn, you know what it's like, okay? You see somebody in a certain position, you know, and if you're there long enough, it gets stale. And the truth of the matter is, people say he's a dictator and he's gathered all this power. No, he hasn't gathered all this power. David Dean brought two people to the club in Kroenke and Usmanov, and he screwed the pooch with Fisman. And in all, after Dean's departure, there was a void, and the only man capable in the club at that time was Wenger to carry on the reins, so to speak, to take over that position. And it's the club have allowed that to happen, which is the club's fault. Now, whether we like Arsene Wenger, whether we dislike Arsene Wenger, Arsene Wenger doesn't go out to lose. He doesn't go out to put the team in this position where we are vulnerable this season. And it's about time the man got a bit of credit. Do I think it's time for him to go? Yes, I do. But do I think we should hound him? No, I think we make the point in, you know, the valid points that are made by a lot of people get lost in the bitterness and the bollocks that they speak.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with everything you just said. You know, it's time for him to go. He should go with dignity. He's been a fantastic manager for our club. Absolutely brilliant. He's been a fantastic manager for English football. But he just, you know, he just, I don't think he will recognise himself when the time is right and somebody needs to tell him that time is right.
And but the thing is as well.
3 years ago, actually.
Yeah. If he goes, I do apologise, but I just want to make one point. If he goes somewhere else, he could have another nice new career. You know, for somewhere in another club and have a bit of fresh air and, you know, reinvent himself in that way.
Yeah, but how old is he? Does he really want to move to a different city now? I mean, even if it's Paris. And would PSG or any other team club, you know, would they want Wenger? Am I being so unkind to him to say, you know, actually, why would they want him? He's past it. He's got nothing fresh to offer.
I don't think he's as coveted as people think he is. But certainly 10, 12 years ago, I'd absolutely agree that he would have had the pick of any club, and I do believe that he did turn down Madrid and whoever else came approached him. But now he wouldn't last 5 minutes in the Spanish clubs. He would not last the way he operates, because they want instant success.
But the truth of the matter is, Raj, our perspective as Arsenal fans is different perspective of other clubs, and that's the thing. Who knows? It's not for me to say, is it?
They won't win. Winners. He hasn't won the league in, you know, what is it, 12 years?
That's true, yeah.
He's well
past. I had a thought about this the other day, where when Fergie finished up, because you can compare the two slightly because, you know, they were both, you know, iconic managers for such a long time at big clubs. Fergie has horse racing and, you know, wine and all these other hobbies and passions and things to fall back on, which I think allowed him to exit at the right time. And people were saying that he probably could have done another season or two if he wanted to. Whereas I don't get the feeling with the things that you hear. I mean, I know that Arsene Wenger doesn't have that many people close to him that are able to report on the guy. But from everything that you do hear, he is a football obsessed man. Every minute of every day is football. And when he's not coaching and when he's not at the club, he's at home watching games. And he's just that kind of, you know, freakish, obsessive person when it comes to football, that I don't think he would know what to do with himself if he left Arsenal. I don't think he would know what to do with himself. The thought of not turning up to train Arsenal probably scares the crap out of him. And that does make me wonder if he's actually going to ever be in a position to know when the time is right.
I agree. I absolutely agree with you. I think he can go be a pundit on French TV or something, but I agree. And that's why I keep saying somebody needs to tell him. I don't know who, but somebody needs to tell him, you know, Arsene, time's up now. Because I agree with you, absolutely. He lives it and breathes it, and he'll never give it up. Never.
Well, I'll do one more question for everybody, and then we can do, well, we've got no predictions. This one, I'll give this one to you, Glenn, from Hax Ola. He says, is Stan Kroenke's running of Arsenal any different to the way the Hillwood family did for years? Now, I'm not sure what he means by that.
Well, I'm not sure what he means by that either, because I think, you know, the Hillwood family were quite interested in the football. And I don't think Kroenke is remotely interested in the football. He's only interested in the bottom line. And he's invisible, you know, I don't really see the comparison either, Hax. I don't know what sort of name Hax is. Plural of journalists. I think a more interesting question is, would we like David Dean back? Because, you know, would that make a difference?
Isn't he the one who put us in this position with Usmanov and Kroenke? He brought Kroenke to the club.
Yeah, he did. He also brought Arsene as well.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And it's 10 years on, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's not him, maybe not him, but I think we need somebody up there who actually cares about football and understands football. I personally would like to see much more involvement with, you know, I'd like to see Bergkamp and Pires come in. I'd like to see our players come in, you know.
Since most of us all want the similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
Right. Raj, one for you from Dimitri. Assuming Wenger stays, how does he get back the trust of some of the fans, or has he reached the point of no return?
He wins the league.
Yeah, he's just going to have to rebuild that team and compete next season. I don't think he's going to be given any time. He's got one season to win back the fans.
He's got to win the league.
I've never said we should expect winning the league and stuff. It's tough. Only one team can win the league. But the minimum expectation, as I said a million times, is that we should be competing. And when I do mean compete, I mean, you know, in the last 6 weeks of the season, not in November when we're top. We're always top in November. But, you know, he hasn't got much time. If he signs on for another 1 year or 2 years, good luck to him, because I think he's up. He's got a mission. He's just... He'll struggle. He's going to have to get the right players in, which I don't trust he will do. Yeah. And he's going to have to create a squad that's going to compete from the off. And I don't think that's going to happen as well. I don't think he has the ability to manage a team that can compete for a championship. I'm sorry to say that, but it's the truth.
I think the fan base now is so split that even if he won the league next season, I think there are still a lot of fans out there who would not be satisfied and would feel that they couldn't forgive him for whatever it is.
Well, those fans aren't fans, and that's horrendous. I'm a person that wants change. I don't blather on about it on social media, but my God, if he won the league, and fans were still unhappy, well, I wouldn't want to be associated with those fans. I want to win the league. I want to win every game. I want to win against City. I'm not a fan who wants us to lose to prove a point. I know that there are a lot of fans out there who want us to lose games. I'm not one of those.
Are there a lot, or are they just making a lot of noise on Twitter? Because I find I just want us to win every game, of course.
There's always people who are too far down the rabbit hole, aren't there?
Yeah, and Twitter is a tiny percentage of Arsenal fans.
They're more prominent on Twitter, aren't they?
They're just loud. And so what you see on Twitter, it makes you sometimes believe that it's a bigger group of people, but not really.
I don't think when I go to the Emirates, there are 50,000 people there. I don't think, I think almost all of them, surely even all of them, want us to win.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the people that want us to lose every game, and there are some, because I've seen it on Twitter, they're a tenth of 1% or even a hundredth of 1% of our fan base. So you're talking about a very, very small number compared to millions of others, basically.
Yeah.
All right, question for Dom. You get a choice, Dom. One on Wilshire and Bournemouth, one on transfers, or one on the boardroom.
Oh, definitely not the boardroom. I got no fucking idea what's going on there.
So it's either transfers or Wilshire.
Let's go Wilshire.
All right, this is from two people here. Fred Thurbin asks, are we concerned Wilshire can't make the Bournemouth squad? And Steve Wood follows that up with, when and if Jack comes back from Bournemouth, would he make the squad for next season? And who would the starting midfield be? I think you can forget about that last bit. But yeah, if he comes back, would he make the squad? And are you worried about it? Do you know what's going on at Bournemouth with him?
Jack's the most talented player on that Bournemouth squad by a country mile. Make no mistake about that. The only reason that he hasn't been starting lately is because they're injury management and they're doing it properly. And they've been in cahoots with Arsenal, which is good to hear, about making sure that his load is being managed correctly. And this is something that goes back to some of my friends at home who play professional Aussie rules football and the tracking that they need to do these days. And I reference Aussie rules football, not only obviously because, it's the number one sport where I'm from, but it is a leader. People kind of don't know a lot about it, but these athletes that play this sport are very well known in the industry as being some of the best athletes overall in the world. And so the sports science and things that goes on in Australia with these players is so elite and so, I can't even explain the word, but it's so specific. Yeah, it's absolutely on point that it takes the Premier League and other sort of bigger, richer leagues 3 or 4 years to catch up. And so one of my friends at home had to put his finger in a little heart rate monitor every morning when he woke up. That data got sent to the club. They would then track his heart rate. And if it started to get really high when he woke up, it meant that his body was struggling to recover, which mean they changed his individual load through his training. That's the kind of stuff that's finally being able to sort of get passed on into the Premier League for players like Jack, where he might want to go and run around with the rest of the players and kick balls and do the training that Alexis Sanchez does. But guess what? You can't. So that they have to manage that person's load individually, which they're doing with Jack now, which is why you're not seeing him play 90 minutes every single game, because it's not really important for Bournemouth to be playing him 90 minutes every game anyway. He's purely there to get some fitness, to get some game time. That's not the purpose of Jack being there. It's to get him back into playing regularly, to go through a season without any huge big injury concerns, and to get his confidence and, you know, to shake off the rust a little bit. So what's happening with Jack at Bournemouth is exactly the right thing that should be happening. Whether he gets a spot in the Arsenal team next season, well, at the moment you would say yes, depending on what changes happen and the manager, etc. I still think there's a spot for Jack.
And also, I think there's been a little bit of concern because recently Bournemouth have had a bit of a bad run. So they've changed from a 4-5-1 with three central midfielders to a 4-4-2. And he's been sacrificed. And so, especially at the weekend, I mean, he was third choice. At the weekend, they played a bloke coming back from injury ahead of playing him. So maybe they are just being overly cautious with him and picking his games for him rather than just playing him week in, week out, which is, I think, some Arsenal fans want to see. But that wouldn't be any good for Jack short term or Arsenal long term.
Exactly.
Yeah. Lovely. Right, Jace, you're not going to get... Oh, you can have a choice. Do you want boardroom or transfers?
Oh, transfers.
Oh, from Fiscals Discos, number one. He says, when we need eight replacements, I'm not sure where he's got that from, plus possibly Ozil and Alexis, what the actual fuck does 100 million get you? Exclamation mark, question mark. By the way, he says, excuse the French.
It's not a problem. Look, let's be
honest. Replacements is a problem.
Yeah, but the thing is, I don't think the situation is as bad as made out. I think at the moment, you know, you bring in three, four players, and we're right. You know, I think, you know, if Ozil leaving, well, no offence, how many great games he had this season? 2-3? You know, he's been anonymous this season. I love Mesut Ozil, but if he goes, ta-da. We've seen Thierry Henry leave. We've seen, you know, Tony Adams retire, Bergkamp retire. It's not the end of the world. If Sanchez goes, I don't want them to go. Don't get me wrong. But then, ta-ra, we'll bring in somebody else. You know, you'll have revenue from their sales. There will also be bargains out there that we can pick up. You know, make no mistake, you know, there are players out there who aren't £50 million every time. But the truth of the matter is, I don't think we need a massive overhaul of the squad. I do think we need a striker. I do think we need an attacking wide player. I do think we need a proper DM.
Yeah.
You know, somebody who's smart and who can do the Kante job. And there are players out there, as Raj said earlier on, ask Chris. He'll reel them off his tongue.
Yeah, but it'll also take up half your life with the answer.
For how many seasons have we said the same thing? We need a goal scorer and a defensive midfielder. Yeah. We've been saying it for the last, you know, we've been saying it for years.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I do think we need to change Nacho as well. I think we need somebody to come in for that position with a bit more gas. Centre-halves, I'd be more than happy if you've got Pear, you've got Koscielny, Mustafi, Chambers and Holding. I think that's good enough. I do think...
Pers passed it now, I think. I mean, Mertesacker, you know...
Yeah, but from the bench, as somebody to come on now and again, I think that's fine. You know, but you're looking at Chambers and Holding of the future, and Chambers has come off a great season at Borough, so I don't think we need eight players. I think we'd need, even with Mesut and Sanchez going, I think you need five.
Need Lukaku and a really good, tough defensive midfielder. I thought we had in Xhaka the Hacker, but I'm not sure what's happening for him.
Well, you know, the one thing is, you look at Monaco at the moment, there's a boy Mbappe up front, you know. Apparently, we've been talking to him. You know, and there's other players out there, you know, it's not the end of the world, but we need to be influencing those players now, and you need to be getting deals done early, and you need to get them in early, begin the season, and bed the team down. Once they come back from the holidays, get them in.
But will Arsene play those players? You know, we signed Lucas Perez. He missed many games.
I genuinely can't answer that. I don't know. I can't answer that. But you know, you look at.
he signed Lukaku and he probably plays Giroud or Sonogo in front of him.
All right, let's not mention Sonogo.
Right, we've got 5.5 minutes to go and then we'll have done the magical hour and a half for the first time in nearly 300 podcasts, right?
So
a thank you to David Edwards, AFC Ian, Mark Blondell, Will Clark, Austin Walsh, Josiel Green and UZ for the questions that we didn't get time for. And yeah, there you go, Jace. We can now do the no predictions, but we got gentlemen's nods.
Yeah. Right. At the end of the podcast, I'll be saying something on events from yesterday. But Glenn, have you got a shout out that you want to give somebody?
No.
Fuck them.
Should I give a shout out to? Oh, a shout out to my son Sebastian.
Sebastian.
Sebastian Sebi. He's only 10. Loves Arsenal.
Oh. Oh, he can't listen to the swearing.
Is it too late for you to change his mind for him so he doesn't have years of pain?
Yeah.
Give him a Man City top. He'll be fine. Or Chelsea top.
Chelsea, yeah.
Oh, no, don't do that. Raj, shout out, sir.
So it's going to be the last person that followed me, and it's Louise Zoe. That's at Zthorpe1989. She doesn't tell me much about herself, but she looks gorgeous. So there you go. But she is definitely an Arsenal fan, looking at her biog. So there you go. At Zthorpe1989.
Fantastic. I thought it was going to be one of those accounts, then the bot accounts.
With a little link.
Hi, click on this. Tom, shout out, mate.
John Welsh's terrible beard, you know. I haven't heard much about John Welsh's beard lately, so I'm wondering how it's going. If it's back to its glorious, you know,
Glory
days, or if it's in the state of Arsenal at the moment. I've got a funny feeling it's in a state of disarray.
I think it's like a poor wicket.
You caught me on the hop when you asked me because I wasn't sure what you meant. But if you meant what you meant is people on Twitter and so on, I would give a shout out to Red Souled Gunner because she's always very contrary and it's very entertaining, and Princess Guna Amanda because she always talks sense.
Oh, we know Amanda.
We know Amanda. I'm not sure.
She always talks.
Hello, Amanda.
I once got her to Google Bukkake.
Oh no!
I did. She said she did a tweet. Me with four men in one room. I said, "Yeah, Google." Oh, she wasn't happy.
He's the new Japanese striker, is he?
I think he is. Yeah, plays for online a German second division team, I think.
Okay. Daniel, your shout out, please.
It's going to go to at Mr. Arsenal 93. Now, if you go and have a look at his account, he has sent us it looks like the premise for a sitcom, a football based sitcom. He has gone into detail. He's done 14 points. He's done a bonus 15 point. It is talking about Arsenal and the academy and first team signings and new assets. Academy signings and previous seasons loanees. My God, the bloke has spent longer doing that than we've spent on a bloody podcast and more effort. So yeah, people go and have a look at his account. I'll go and retweet it from the podcast account and yeah, see if you've got any replies to it. I said that's a podcast all on its own. So yeah, very well done. I think he's done a couple of decent questions over the past. So he might have done the one that we saved from one week for another because it was that really, really good question. It's quite a long one. So yeah, well done.
Fantastic. My shout outs to.
I was gonna say, have you got anyone?
Yeah. The guy who stitched me up earlier on Twitter. It's Allegri at the Allegri era. The git. He absolutely tumbled me earlier on.
How did he remember a podcast? I mean, a radio, what was it? An After Dark live.
The that first. We did
just over 2 years ago. And he remembered you talking about the hidden bodies that you. Stuffed away somewhere.
It wasn't the hidden bodies. We just stole a person for the evening.
Oh, same thing.
These things happen.
They do.
Right, before I say goodbye to the panel and Danny, on behalf of us all at ABW, we just want to acknowledge the horrific events yesterday at Parliament and on Westminster Bridge. The one thing I will say, as a Welshman who's gone back and forth to London all my life, anybody thinks they're going to beat that city, they got another thing coming. So it's all stuff to do is say thank you very much to Glenn. It's been a pleasure having you on, sir.
Thank you. Pleasure was mine.
Brilliant. We'll have you back soon, no doubt, hopefully. Raj Patel, good to have
back
you.
Back again in a few weeks, hopefully, yeah.
Enjoy touring the rock and roll lifestyle.
Cheers, thank you.
Dom, happily brightening up the east coast of Canada in Vancouver. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure.
West coast.
Yeah, no, he's on the east coast. Oh, here's the west coast, sorry. Hmm. Oh, bugger.
Shut that up, didn't you?
Well, not the first time, is it, to be fair?
That would be the laugh.
Danny, you have to be here.
And thanks you to stepping in at the last moment, because Kim Lee got some gingivitis.
Again. Yes. Again.
I know.
And thank you to the listeners. There's no radio show this weekend because it's international break. There should be a blog out on Tuesday, I think, but we'll double check on that and we'll tweet it from the pod account. And thank you to the listeners. As usual, you're superb. Thank you for your support, and up the Arsenal. Take care. Good night.
To let me know, should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So you got to let me know, should I stay or should I go? It's always tease, tease, tease. You're happy when I'm on my knees. One day it's fine, the next it's black. So if you want me off your back, well, come on and let me know. Should I stay or should I go? Should I stay or should I go now? Should I stay or should I go now? If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So come on and let me know. This indecision's bugging me.
Decision may molest
you. If you don't want me, set me free.
Set me free.
Exactly whom I'm supposed to be. Don't you know which clothes even fit me? Come on and let me know. Should I cool it or should I blow?
Should I go now?
If I go, there will be trouble. And if I stay, it will be double. So you gotta.